You're listening to Kevin and the Spleen.
No one's gonna ever love me.
1098.5 Radio QWX. Real quick.
Bussin, no cap.
No cap.
Really smack you in the ass with flavor. There you go. This show is about depression, anxiety, PTSD, and chronic unemployment.
Going quick. We're trying to keep you on the path to the ride home on the evening time.
It's a fucking zoo.
Make it quicks. The Quicks Radio.
White lives do not matter.
Hey, kids, you know what it is. How you doing tonight? We coming out of the stomach tonight, broadcasted from the dungeon known as the stomach. You know what it is. That's right. It's, what do we call this? WKUK, the cook, baby. That's right. Also Quicks, with the Quicks Radio Hour. That's right. We're sponsored by them, I think. I don't know. It's not entirely clear to me, but what is clear is that you're here live now with the Spleen, baby, and that means Kevin is...
The best songs on the radio. This is my only favorite station.
What the fuck was that? Kevin, where? I can't see. Kevin, what just happened, Kevin? I can't, what the fuck was that? I cannot see. Kevin, where are you?
I'm right here. I'm right here. That was a bumper.
What the fuck? What was? I've never heard anything like that before in my life.
Which is surprising coming from a 30-year radio vet like yourself.
I'm gonna be sick.
Oh no, the spleen's dying.
Now I'm turning into a zombie. Rah, give me your brain. I don't know. What's up? How's it going?
It's going pretty good. It's going good. I'm feeling pumped for tonight's show.
Wow. That's ominous. Well, why is that?
I don't know. I've got energy today. I'm in a good mood. Wow. You know, I'm feeling good.
Yeah, what'd you eat today?
I had the KFC, how do they pronounce it? Chizza? Chizza? The chicken pizza?
Chizza.
Pizza? Like pizza? Yeah, okay. However they pronounce it, that's what I had today. KFC, like, it's a slab of chicken with some pizza sauce and cheese on top and some pepperoni, and that was what I ate today.
So, I've been thinking about this chizza. Mm-hmm. I'm a bit of a cheats myself. I cheats on women. You know what I'm saying? But I was thinking, speaking of cheating on women and two-timing, about, have you heard about the double down sandwich, making a cheats a double down? You know, you smack them together, and now you got a pepperoni tomato sandwich of double down stuff.
It feels like that would be too thick.
It is, just like the double down was too thick.
That's true. Have you tried one of these?
No, because when I try it, I want it to be like that. I want it to make it like the sandwich and eat it. And then I'm like, and then the sauce is getting anywhere. And I don't even know if I want like the pepperonis, you know, I don't know. And then I'm like, maybe later. And then if I'm there, I just order the sandwich or the smashed potato bowl. Kevin, have you had the smashed potato bowl?
I have. It's actually pretty good.
It is pretty good. I've always been an advocate of their famous bowls. And I had a friend named Cody, and he was like, you know what? You can get the famous bowl, but you can get them to swap the mashed potatoes for mac and cheese. So they have mac and cheese, and then you can ask them to keep the gravy on it. And oh man, now you're cooking. And that was really good. But that was good, and the regular mashed potato bowl is good, and then they have the spicy one that was good. And now they have the smashed potato bowl, which has french fries and cheese sauce instead of gravy. And I'm still like, well, give me cheese sauce and gravy. I mean, come on. What are you, the fucking gravy miser over here?
I just realized I actually have one here. I ordered this for Ariel and I forgot to give it to her. Oh,
what?
Okay, this is the most disappointing looking. That's all that was in the bowl. I haven't half eaten one. That's actually how it came.
Oh, so it seemed like, you know, kind of like a souffle. It's collapsed in on itself.
Yes. Okay, yeah, it's empty. Wow.
That's wild. But they are pretty cheap, so I don't know. That's maybe why. I mean, and you can get them without the chicken or with the chicken. Without the chicken, they're only like $4 or something. It's almost like a side item, like a premium side. But those, I don't know. What the fuck are we doing? That's right, folks. It's time for the post-intro slump. Yeah, just send it. Oh, yeah. We really need some sort of like music sting for the post-intro slump. Like, and it should be like... It should be a really overweight, like, old man on a bench, like, making noises. Like, just like, what the fuck was that? Oh, my God. I told you I was going to be sick. Oh, my God. I don't know what the fuck's going on in the studio, but something's got to stop.
You got to give me soundboard cues.
No, I think, oh my God, you know. So, what do you think about soundboards? You ever listen to podcasts with soundboards, radio shows with soundboards?
I do, and I feel like most of them that have them just way overuse it.
Of course. It's almost like that's the real joke with soundboard is, haha, look at me overusing the soundboard, you know? Because if the joke is, look at this joke and that joke and this sound and that sound, and that, all of those are terrible jokes. All of that sucks. But look at me, I'm kind of being terrible and annoying. Like, that's at least like a bit you could do. Why did I bring this up? Oh, because you almost want the person to overdo it a little bit. That's like the real line, is what's overdoing it the right amount. But you and me have similar judgment. You actually do it right, which is really good, like a sniper, which, we have similar skill sets in that sense. And I'm wondering, is it better to just overdo it? But no, I think you are nailing it, and I think the audience will bear that out on the good Discord as we record. And speaking of the good Discord, there's another good Discord on my Patreon, and you can join it if you sign up for my Patreon, and you can also get in the credits and join the good Discord. And I'm not bad at the Patreon. It's just doing something different than I was before. Okay. Enough of that. The podcast is good. Well, I don't know. I still miss my cat. I don't know if you were curious. I wasn't like, oh, it's good. It's good now. Now it's a good thing.
I mean, I was, but there's no good way to be like, hey, do you still miss your cat? That's not a very good question.
It's like, oh yeah, I figured you would. Okay, good. Good to know. Yeah, no, I don't know. It just sucks. I don't know, man. I'm real depressed lately. I just feel like, I don't know. Everything's just really bad. The world's really bad. Here's the thing, Kevin. The world is fucked. Have you noticed?
I have, actually. I have this just impending sense of doom about the future.
Yeah. Okay. Communication theory. Thesis, antithesis, antithesis, synthesis, right? I don't know. Let's try it. Thesis. The world's fucked. Okay. Antithesis. But I'm not gonna fucking fix it. Are you fucking kidding me? I'm not gonna fix it. It's too fucked. Synthesis. I mean, so we're all fucked then, right? Because no one's fixing it, because everybody had that thought process. What do you think?
I mean, that's a fair thought. I feel like the people who go, yeah, I'm the one who's going to solve this, are probably the least, the last people I would want to be solving the world's problems. Yeah. And that leaves everybody else, like you and me, who's like, well, there's nothing I can do. So, yeah, I think you're onto something here.
I feel, and this is delusional and arrogant, and it fits with me being a narcissist and stuff, but, I often am possessed with the idea that I can fix it, and somehow it is up to me, which is a delusion and narcissism and arrogance. But it's also, think about how harmful that is. Because if I can do it and I'm not, I got to give myself the worst time in the world about it because it's my fault that the world's like this, you know? So that's not healthy. But at the same time, I mean, realistically, I could be doing more to help solve the problem and soak in everybody else. And that kind of is the only reason there is a problem, right? But I don't know, whatever. I don't know. We were texting about this earlier, but this kind of ties back a little bit to what I was talking about, Art Bell. But like, I feel like something he taps into and probably something conservatives tap into and maybe something liberals tap into and something that affects me a lot and something that happens to people who are intellectuals or think of themselves as intellectuals or think of themselves as smart, but also happens to something about all, like something that happens to all humans in general is like, the idea that there is this answer, the idea that I can solve it and I could come to an answer that if I then solved and worked with far enough, I could fix the world or whatever. You know, that's the biggest version of that. But, you know, the conservatives are like, if you just did this and that, I could solve the problem and everything would be good. And Art Bell and these people are like, if you just listen to me about the coming apocalypse, it'll be good. Or if you charge your intentions and fire it at the sun to deflect an asteroid, you know, then we'll all be saved. And or if you just listen to me about the alien conspiracy, you know, like if I were to just do enough braining, I could get the right answer, and the right answer will also be compelling and agreeable to me. You know, it's not just an answer I don't like. It's also an answer I do like. That's how hard I have to brain. And that'll happen by me being really smart and thinking really hard. And if other people sound really smart and say crazy stuff and I'm thinking hard enough, I might pick up on some of that. And, you know, I might, you know, and now I'm trying to brain so hard. I don't know. I don't know. I kind of lost my train of thought there. But I don't, there just seems to be like shared DNA with like Art Bell. Whatever. Who cares? Anyway. That wasn't even my notes. Before I go onto my notes, do you have anything off of that? Maybe I can jump back into it or something.
No, I am in complete agreement with you. You know, it's there's so many people who claim to be the saviors who, you know, not only have the solution to all of our problems, but generally will not tell us what that solution is unless we do what they want. But right. Only they can save us.
Yeah, it's in their book. You have to buy their book. And also, yeah. It's not in their book either.
Like, yes, right.
You have
right.
to buy their next book or something, you know? But yeah, I think I remembered where I was driving towards a little bit, which, I mean, isn't anywhere anyway. But it is good. It's a good podcast. But where I was going with it was that I feel like in this quest to, like, find answers and stuff, I think, like, there's this search for data. I don't know. Everyone was, there's this article about Mr. Beast, how he said his like personality was a barrier or something. And they're like, oh, it's so sad how he's like lost his identity in pursuit of numbers. And like, I don't know. Mr. Beast has always been a weird guy who's sought numbers at the expense of being a person. But it's just interesting how it feels like you get lost in this pursuit of data and you kind of forget why you're tracking data. And you're just like, oh, I just need more data and more computing power to go through the data and more data. And it becomes like, okay, all I'm going to do is get the most data, the most powerful data set ever. And then you're like, why am I getting this data anyway? And it's like, well, surely what I've been trying to do will be aided by more data. And it's like, but what are you even trying to do? And it's like, well, generate more data. And it's like, what the fuck are you doing? And it's like, oh, I've gone mad with power. I've become like a crazy corrupt wizard who's like getting high on radiation magic or something. You know, it's like I'm just doing data for its own sake. And I feel like there's something kind of capitalistic about that. If you think of data as being a resource the way money is being a resource, you could also hoard data capital the same way you hoard money capital. And you can think about data and capital and money as being similarly hoardable capitalistic resources that engender similar things. But someone being greedy and money driven is interestingly different than someone being greedy and data driven. But I don't know, in tracking myself as like trying to lose weight and stuff, that's something I'm trying not to lose sight of, is just be like, okay, only thinking about numbers and just trying to be holistic about it and being like, you know, maybe I don't need to lose weight like as much. I can like bounce up a little bit and go back down, you know, and maybe try and gain weight through muscle. And I don't know. This is just all stuff that's been brewing in my head, I guess, you know. Anything off of that? You don't have to. I just want to give you a chance because I feel like I just, well, what I should do before I keep steamrolling.
No, I mean, I don't think I have anything to add to that because I'm in just in total agreement with you, and that's kind of boring for me to keep saying again. But I think you're right. I think, you know, we've become this almost data-driven economy, mm-hmm. and that, you know, we feel like whoever has the most data wins, but sometimes that's not true. You know, we're getting lost in the numbers. We're getting lost in the just swarm of information that almost counterintuitively makes you make worse decisions.
Right, exactly. That's the thing. Which, I mean, this is like a principle that's available. But there is such thing as too much information. It makes you worse at evaluating and decision making. Like, that's something I want to say, like they talk about in business or something. Like, it's important to be able to cut out extraneous information that's not going to help. Like, understanding what's irrelevant for decision making is a pretty tough part of decision making. But that's part of it. And that's something that humans naturally have to learn to guard themselves more and more. The more stimulating and, you know, crazy the world gets, and the more people get better at hacking or pattern recognition circuits, you know. All right, what do we have on my notes? Okay, I took my car in to the shop. I took my car into the shop because it's been making this noise. I don't know for how long. I don't think for very long. Maybe for longer than I'm imagining. Who knows? But they looked at it, and it turned out like a something was shorn, torn, ripped, snapped in the suspension. It was like the sway control bar or something, the sway control rod, tire sway, I don't know. And so it's a part that I guess breaks, and it breaks before the more serious parts of the car break, and it doesn't cost very much to fix. And so that was really good news. And I was like, holy shit. I mean, it sucks to be like, oh, my car's making a noise and needs to be maintenance. And it still sucks that I had to pay money and stuff. But man, I was really dreading something serious. And it was like, oh, it's this part that breaks. And yeah. But they were also like, oh, they also identified a noise coming from your driver's seat. And so here's what it's going to cost to replace your driver's seat. $5,680. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I mean, the car was like 20 something. I don't know. But it's like, that's like a quarter, a fifth of the car price or something. Like, what's going on? There's like four seats. Is that like, is all the car just seats and you get the rest of the car for free? Like, what's going on? And the guy was like, yeah, they're just really expensive. And I was like, I mean, okay, yeah, but what's expensive about it? Is like, he's like, yeah, I don't know, it's just really expensive. And I'm like, okay, is the passenger seat that expensive? And he's like, no, that one's cheap. I'm like, okay. And I'm just like, I'm trying to put this together because I don't know. It's like there's a heater in it, but there's a heater in the passenger seat. There's the automatic mover thing. I don't fucking know. I don't know. It's just insane to me. And they just flagged it because it was making like a creaking noise. Like, because if you sit in it, it goes, you know, like a couch does when you sit in it, you know, like upholstery shifting. I don't know. Which is probably old. And there's probably something wrong with it, but it is a chair. It's not the suspension of the car. You know, it's I'll get a cushion or something. It'll be fine. But that was an interesting situation. It was an interesting bill to look at and be like, well, wait, what am I even looking at? But hey, okay. So here's, you got anything off of that, Kevin?
I mean, I'm guessing part of that
sucks.
Is probably,
this is a bad format choice. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
The labor behind that is probably very expensive, especially the driver's seat, because the steering wheel can be in the way sometimes. You know, I owned a car where to get the driver's seat out, you would take the steering wheel off, which complicated. And I'm going to guess the driver's seats are the ones that wear out most often, because you always have a driver, but you don't always have a passenger. So, you know, pulling used seats from junkyards and stuff like that, you're going to run out of the driver's seats before anything else. So maybe that's why the driver's more expensive than the passenger, but I'm just guessing here. I'm not a mechanic. Yeah,
I think that makes sense. Yeah, other than that, like, it doesn't seem substantially very different than the passenger seat, but who knows? I'm sure the passenger seat is more expensive than the fucking back bench, you know, or whatever. Anyway, everything is good. And everything is good and my life is good. Anxiety and other people is what this note says. So, okay. You know, something I've dealt with in the past, talked about, is narcissism. And I feel like I have narcissist tendencies, and I've dropped that to an extent. But the thing is, like, I think of myself as a good person. And part of that is because I think about other people and my impact on other people, right? I'm like, oh, I don't want to speed. I don't want to rear end this person. I don't want to get too close behind this person. I don't want to go too slow in front of this person, you know, et cetera. I'm just worrying about my impact of other people and deciding, oh, that makes me a good person. But the thing is, like, that's just anxiety. That's not necessarily being a good person. It's just I'm worried about what other people might think. And so I'm making all these decisions based on anxiety in the hope of avoiding some, you know, problem because of trauma or whatever the fuck. And that's different than caring about other people. And it's not to say I don't care about the people, and it's not to negate the idea of caring about other people, but it's just not, because it is focusing inward by means of projecting outward. And so it feels like you're focusing outward on other people, on other people's feelings, but in fact you are worrying about yourself and somehow being self-absorbed, self-interested, and like kind of self-motivated, you know? And it's not really caring about other people's. It's born of like a selfish desire to not have a problem or whatever. And that is a bad way to be, because it's exhausting and you're expending this energy thinking you're helping the way you come off to other people, and thinking you're helping other people by diminishing yourself and wasting energy doing this. And by focusing on all this stuff and focusing on yourself through these actions and neuroticisms, you're creating barriers between you and creating an actual relationship with that person. You know, if you're constantly saying, for instance, am I being annoying or something, you're constantly putting the idea of in the other person's head, oh, I think that you have a negative judgment of me. I think badly of you, which is to say, it would be bad if I thought negatively of you, and you think that about me. That would be bad. I would feel bad about myself if I thought that. And you're saying that you think that? That's bad. That's negative. You're creating negativity that wasn't there before, and it's making things worse. And so, yeah, I think I am a good person. Not to say I'm not a good person, but I think a lot of my math trying to make that all work, and also a lot of math about me being a smart person, is just anxiety. And it's me like clinging to anxiety and putting it on a pedestal and saying it's something that has value, when really it's mostly a disease. You know, part of it is who I am, but then a good part of it is just like human glitches, you know, human viruses and things we just have to deal with and reboot and get by and deal with despite, you know. And I've been thinking about that more and more lately. I don't really have like a takeaway or like an agenda, like a way to use this knowledge, but it sucks to realize, I guess. I don't know. What do you think of that, huh?
Well, okay. So I think, you know, people, if someone gets annoyed by something that you're doing, you know, or something like that, it's kind of a reflection of like, you know, people want to be treated the way they treat people, and vice versa. You know, if someone is mad about the way that you're treating them, that reflects on how they want to be treated and how they hope that their perception of being a person shows up to them, you know. So if you look at how somebody is anxious about something, like, you know, you saying to me, hey, am I being annoying, I try really hard not to take that in a negative way. You know, I don't see that as negative energy. I see that more as like, okay, Spencer's really concerned about this. I should probably do a better job of making him feel that that's not an issue without making him ask for it, you know. Or at the very least, I try to be the kind of person that would be like, you know, okay, this is a concern of Spencer's. I should get ahead of that so that he doesn't need to ask me that in the future and things like that. But I recognize that the vast majority of people don't do this. And, you know, probably there are people out there that get annoyed by that, but I don't think you should change who you are because you're worried about your insecurities coming across in an annoying way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. Which brings me to my next topic, is that we have to nominate Kevin to be the next Buddha, I think. We found an enlightened being on Earth. No, that makes sense. I think that, yeah, I get what you're saying. You don't want me to change myself. I agree to the extent that there's things about me that I think are maybe not healthy to me, but are a part of how I come off to people. And to the extent that they like me, that's part of why they like me. And maybe it would be better if I wasn't like that. But that also might make them like me less, but I don't really care or whatever. You know, it's fine. I'd be fine with that. I think there's like something, I don't know. But at the end of the day, I think it's just like, you know, the idea of being present, right?
Right.
Like, it's important to be present. I think it's not like you're not necessarily giving what you need to be giving to a healthy relationship if you're always being anxious like that, because it takes away your ability to be present, which hypothetically the other person should deserve, which you can't necessarily deliver that to them all the time. But in general, I don't think that's like something that is conducive. Whether or not it's like how harmful it is, whether or not it is harmful is another matter. Depends on the circumstance. But it's more like that. It's like I'm denying myself an opportunity to be better rather than it is the way I am is broken. I don't know. Maybe I'm just convincing myself that I do think like the way I am is fucked up and broken. So, you know, there is some of that. But at the same time, I do recognize it comes back to like your greatest strength is your greatest, or your greatest weakness is your greatest strength pushed too far. Obviously, my brain is a huge part of everything, my whole deal. But when that pushes too far, you know, it becomes overthinking and worrying. It becomes, wow, I'm so smart. I have all the answers and it's up to me to fix the world. You know, that's when it starts to break down. And that's something I can work on without having to abandon, you know, myself as a smart person, perhaps. You know, we should call this podcast Guys Getting Healthy and or Guys Smelling Their Own Farts, I think. I think, you know, one of those or both or that title could be good.
Let me ask you a question. So,
yeah,
you know, you said that, you know, you sometimes feel like, you know, you have this desire to ask for people like, hey, am I being annoying or something?
Sure. Yeah.
Are you also really annoyed by other people being annoying? Like, is that one of your pet peeves? And are you trying to avoid doing something that really bothers you?
Kind of, I'd say generally no, but things that bother me about people are when they aren't what I call courteous. And you might say courteous is defined by all of my neuroses, you know?
Okay.
But you know, it's like people being careless and in ways that I try not to be careless, if that makes sense. Which, you know, who's to say that the ways I try to be thoughtful even matter to other people, but you know, I think it can, it just depends on the person for sure. But it, you know, I don't know. Oh boy. Okay. I wrote down some stuff that was just fucking like funny words. Like, you know, mostly I write down like little, I don't know, not even stories, but you know, things that spur thoughts that I could talk about on the podcast. But I wrote this stuff that's just like almost just shit to say. But okay, so I've been the Sixler for a long time online, and no name has ever really stuck out to me or like been like a reason to change names. And I think the Sixler is still like the main one. But I had the idea for another username or whatever that I feel like would be like worth making. And it's probably taken already by a bunch of people or whatever, because it's not super original. That's one of the reasons I like the Sixler, because it's never taken, because no one has ever like thought of that ever, for whatever reason. But the name is Cofferoni, like pepperoni, but coughing. And there's no joke. It's not anything. It just, I don't know. It's just Cofferoni. That's all. I don't know why, but something about that is like, yeah, I could be Cofferoni. It's like, yo, what's up? I'm Cofferoni. Or like, you know, playing a video game. It's like, oh shit, Cofferoni just killed me or something. You know, I don't know. Cofferoni. That's all. Why did I even write that down? You know, go ahead.
I thought maybe you were spelling it like coffee. Like coffee. Oh. Cofferoni.
Let me write that down. I'm looking at it written down, and to me it looks a lot better as like Cofferoni. I think when it's Cofferoni, it doesn't look necessarily like coffee, so then you don't go like, what even is that? You like, it's like, it's hard to interpret as a word. It's interesting. I like writing stuff out and then looking at it, because I feel like looking at the actual words is different than like saying or hearing or I don't know, whatever. And it's also like a username is, it's more like written words than it is like a said name anyway. Speaking of which, Yizmia writes, I like on camera, it looks like a Spencer's shirt says, I'm a dad. What do you think of that? Isn't that weird that it kind of looks like that?
It does. What does it actually say?
It actually says, I'm a dad. It does say that. That it says, I'm a dad that runs on Jesus cornhole.
There's a lot dad going on in that
Jesus
shirt.
Cornhole. There's wow. A lot. It's a lot of layers. Okay. So there is another shirt that exists. That's almost exactly like this shirt, but it says, I'm a dad that loves Jesus and cornhole. But the way the ampersand is written on the t-shirt, you can't really see it. So it kind of looks like it says, I'm a dad that looks Jesus like that, like loves Jesus cornhole. And so someone made a shirt that just didn't have the ampersand, and that's this shirt. And I was like, this shirt rocks. I'm going to get it. And I think I have two of them, and one's really small and one's like normal size. I don't know. But yeah, I'm a dad that runs on Jesus cornhole. That's what it is. Thanks, Yizmia. Okay. Okay. Cofferoni. Okay. Here's another thing. Okay. I guess I should set this up in a different way. This is another thing that you can't even talk about for very long. And so I'll set that up with another thing that you also can't talk about for very long. This is just like a thought I had. I don't know what you'd call this, like not even a sketch, just like a joke. I don't know. If I was good at animating, I might like animate this. Because it wouldn't take very long. Maybe I should try that. I don't know. No, I should not. But okay, it's a middle-aged dad, you know, wearing like a business suit, you know, 40, 50-year-old dad or something, wearing a business suit, and he's talking to a black guy, and he's saying, what is he saying? He says, man, I couldn't believe it. Open my eyes. I'm awake now. I stay woke. Huh. I just got that. And that's the whole idea. So that's all to set up. I saw someone on TikTok. Okay. Maybe there's more to talk. Oh, this sucks. This actually does suck. And I'm not going to apologize for saying that about the podcast. But on TikTok, we have a TikTok segment. There's this guy who's a Japanese guy who makes stuff in his truck. He makes food in his truck, and it's really good. He has all these like cooking hot pots and stuff, and he just cooks like ramen in his truck and he eats it. And he makes all these videos where he makes like a ramen and a hot dog and he eats it. And they're really good. And sometimes he's been occasionally making videos with these women who I think are just Japanese social media influencers, because he's pretty big on TikTok. So it's like, you know, what do you call it? A collaboration or whatever. And so, but he's a trucker or he's in a truck or whatever. I don't know. And so he did one of these and people kept saying like, oh, that's a lot lizard. That's a lot lizard. Which a lot lizard is like someone who sleeps with truckers or is like either a prostitute or not a prostitute, depending. I think they're usually what you look it up. I don't care. I've knew what this was, and it's been a while and I've forgotten. Anyway, so I was watching that, and that made me have the thought to leave a comment, but the comment got deleted because I get a lot of my comments deleted by TikTok, and they keep telling me that my account's like could take action against my account, and I'm like, I hope they don't, because I don't want my account deleted. But I was gonna, I left this comment, and it said, if that's a lot lizard, call me scale cunt Lubins. So, you know, I don't know. I don't think that can be the episode title. I think we'll get in trouble. But
I feel like we couldn't get away with that one. We've pushed the envelope a few times, but I think that's probably a little over the line.
Mm-hmm.
But we can say it in the episode, which seems strange.
Yeah, I had an idea about a podcast it's a podcast because I want to do a podcast. We talked about watching stuff on the podcast, you know, or doing a Patreon series where we do that. But like I do, and maybe we should just switch this podcast over. I don't know. Just shit it, talking out loud. No decision. It's fine. You know, talk amongst yourselves. But I had an idea. I want to just do a podcast where we just watch anime and talk about anime. It seems like it would be great to just watch anime and talk about anime because I watch a lot of anime. And I don't talk about anime. And you don't talk about anyone, because then you have to tell people about anime that you watch, and they're like, you fucking watch that? And then you're like, yeah, I didn't, it's not my, I didn't come up with this. So don't, like, I'm not endorsing any of this. It's not, because Japanese, it has a lot of embarrassing stuff, because it has a lot of, they call it fan service and stuff, but there's a lot of what you'd call Japanese tropes that if you did them in America, you'd be arrested. Like, and it's just very commonplace. And so it's very gauche, and it's not within our culture. And I'm not saying it's not good. Like, it's very rapey. It's very sexist. You know, there's racist stuff. There's transphobic stuff. You know, it's not good in a lot of ways. But, you know, I watch a lot of stuff, and I'm not like, hey, this is morally good. This is the kind of morals that I approve of. So, you know, I don't know. But it's just weird. It's weird to talk about stuff to people if they've heard of an anime. They're like, oh my God. You know, I don't know. It's just embarrassing. And it would be good to have a podcast where you just talk about anime. And what do you call that podcast? Well, there's a lot of podcasts, or there's a lot of animes about high school. And anime is for nerds. And so I had the name, and this is maybe a bad name, but the name, and maybe it's taken, I don't know. But the podcast name could be Otaku High, because then it's like Otaku High School. And also, you could do it and be high, and it could be about, like, oh, it's stoners, like, watching freaking anime or something, you know? It's like stoning, being high and being anime, and you know, that's the idea. That's all. Something to think about. What do we got? Okay, so my cat died. I don't know if you guys heard about this. Around the time when my cat died, I read this article by Tally 11, who is a writer with the, it used to be a Substack, but now it's like not a Substack or whatever. You know, Substack loves Nazis. And so she wrote this thing that was about Icarus, and Icarus is a Greek myth. You know, Icarus is a Greek myth. It's a very famous one. Daedalus was a great inventor, and he had a son named Icarus, and either Daedalus or Icarus made the wings, and they made them out of wax. And I think they also made them out of feathers and wax or some shit. And, Icarus flies, and he can fly with the wings, and then he flies too close to the sun, and the sun melts the wings, and he falls, and he dies. And he dies, and Daedalus loses his son to his own invention. And so the article was about that, and there's artists that have painted it, and their paintings, like, have different kind of, I don't know, you might call it artist takes, because art is about stuff. And so, you know, the takes are about different stuff, but they're kind of depicting a bunch of stuff, like pastoral scenes, very peaceful, serene, big scenes depicting lots of different stuff. And lost amongst all this stuff is like Icarus plummeting out of the sky, or Icarus just hitting the ground or something, like Icarus being dead, Icarus in peril. And, you know, you look at the paintings and stuff, and it's striking because it's like, what are the artists trying to say or whatever? And, you know, there's a farmer, and a farmer doesn't seem to notice that Icarus has fallen. He's really far away. And there's another really far fisherman. The fisher's maybe closer, but the fisher's like reeling in a fish or something, you know? And so it's like, what is that saying? It's like, Icarus is dead. Icarus has fallen. A father's lost a son. And the farmer's plowing, and a fisherman's catching fish. And that's the world, huh? You know, kid's dead. No one fucking cares. You know, and there's different takes to it. A kid's dead and no one cares. No one can hear it. But also, a kid's dead and what are we to do? The fisherman has a boat. Is he supposed to go get it? It's not going to bring him back. What's the farmer supposed to do? Look at it? It's just a dead kid. What's that going to do? Look at the dad? Watch the dad cry? That's not going to fucking do anything. Farmer's got to work. He's got to make the money. He's got to fucking get the harvest. The fisherman's got to make money. He's got to get fish, you know? Like, we all got to make fucking money. Also, Daedalus has to make money. His son just died. He's still got to fucking work too. You know? Like, the whole world's going. Also, the fisherman's son probably is dead. You know, and the farmer, he just lost his wife. You know, everybody's always dying. And no one's noticing. And we're just walking by each other. And we're fishing. And we have to go to work. And they have to go to work. And the dead person doesn't get to go to work anymore. And someone has to fill in for the dead person that doesn't go to work anymore. It's fucking insane. The world is fucking insane. I don't know. It's crazy. I don't have a thesis. I don't have a takeaway. It's just, I read it and it really struck me, because it's like, yeah, man, it's like, I'm going through this and it's just a fucking cat. It doesn't matter. And it does. It's the most important thing. I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of people relatively close to me that wouldn't hit me this hard. You know, I don't know. Like, I don't know. And it's scary to think about stuff like that. It just is crazy. And also, we're moving into a time where art isn't necessarily going to have intention. You know, where a philosopher isn't going to look at a painting and have a thought and wonder what an artist was thinking when he painted that, and wonder if his thought was, well, the fucking farmer has to work, and well, it's too far for the fisherman to go, and the fisherman's in the middle of catching a fish. Or is he like, that's the cosmic tragedy. Why is no one looking? Why isn't anyone crying for Daedalus? Why isn't anyone helping? You know, what's the question? But we're moving into a world where there's no answer, because the answer is, I don't know, a machine made it because numbers said so. And so we're going to be watching stuff, and there's going to be an audience who, because there's always been an audience that's watched stuff and not had that thought, because those people are the real robots. You know, they don't actually care what society is. And those people are going to look at this stuff and they're going to laugh and they're not going to care. And they're not going to look at that photo and not think about, you know, oh, I wonder why an artist did that. They're just going to go, oh my God, technology is amazing. And those are the same people we have to sell television to and movies. And those are the same people who vote, you know. And then there's people that look at art and wonder like what the art is, you know. And we work a lot with AI, and I don't know, I'm a lot more apologetic about AI. And I don't know, it's just, it's, the world is really strange, and mostly I don't know, I don't like it. But it is amazing. You can't say it's not amazing, but not good. And I would like it to be better. But I'm not going to fix it. Are you fucking kidding me? Anyway.
Well, what should people do to fix it? What is the fix?
It's political involvement. I mean, it's the plan. It's joining the cult. You know, we got to come up with the plan. But yeah, no, I mean, realistically, you know, when Trump got elected, there was the Indivisible Guide about how to understand political involvement and get politically involved. And I think if I could, you know, if I could awaken people, what I would awaken them to is, it's not that politicians are bad because they're not doing what you want. It's that you're bad for letting them do that. And letting them do that doesn't mean letting them get into office by voting. Letting them do that means letting them be the only politicians in the field. Like it means like, actually, and I say this hypocritically, and I'm not saying like this is the problem, but it is. I mean, it just like this is the problem, and I'm part of the problem, and we all are. But it's like, it isn't voting. Voting is the closest to wiping your ass. It's not like people act like they're customers and they're leaving a bad Yelp review and they're like, I'm going to take my business elsewhere. And it's like, dude, you're wiping your ass. You're complaining that your ass isn't wiped to Yelp. And it's like, that's your ass. Like, you're the one that has to deal with that. I don't care. If your ass is unwiped, you're the guy that suffers. I got to go to work, you know, and people think it's like, no, it's curtains for you. And they're like, no, I'm a politician. I'm rich. I have power. People give me money to execute my power. You don't have power. You have a dirty ass and you will die from it, you know? And so it's like, we need to understand that that's not what voting is. Voting is just wiping your ass. Like, you think it's like being a citizen. Being a citizen is volunteering. Like, being a citizen is mutual aid, and being a citizen is running for office. It's not necessarily running for Congress. It's running for city council. It's running for school board. But it is like a lot more people being a lot more involved, to the point of people who shouldn't and don't want to become politicians becoming politicians, because then there will be a politician that's not the bad politician to vote for, you know. And obviously this does happen. It's gross simplification. The structural policy blocks out all this stuff, but if enough people did it, it would be different. The only reason it is the way it is because right now enough people want it this way. So, you know, that's why it is this way. That's the beautiful thing about humans. There's nothing we can do that more people can't undo. That's simply the case. You know, nothing human. Like, you could blow up the world and then you couldn't necessarily tape the world back together. But anything that humans establish can't be broken by humans. Anything humans break can't be established by humans. So like, that's it. It sucks because the answer is I have to fix the world. Yes. Yes, you do. I do. I do. Everybody has to have that answer and realize that and then take steps. And that sucks. But that if I could wave that wand, that would be the wand, you know, because that's the truth that no one wants to admit. And everything that people feel kind of falls downstream of that, you know. It's kind of like the underlying truth that they don't want to accept that leads them to everything else. And me too, you know, because I don't want to fucking, I don't know. I mean, if I could find a job for a political group, that'd be one thing. But the volunteering, then you don't get paid. I gotta make money, you know. So, yeah. Anyway, I don't know.
I would
feels like
for
the
you.
Podcast should be over. Thanks. I would too. Maybe someday. I don't know. Now you know what? You know what, Kevin? Now that Google is broken, maybe I can run for office because one of my my hair is bad. But one of the and again, this is also delusional and stuff, but one of the things that has always made me think, oh, if you ran for office, you would surely lose, was that if you Google Spencer Crittenden, one of the things that came up reasonably high, I don't know about the first page or whatever, but was a Breitbart article about me telling Nazis to kill themselves. But it wasn't, since it was Breitbart, it wasn't saying Spencer tells Nazis to kill themselves. It's like, evil man tells beautiful children that they should die or something, you know, whatever. And so I was worried that if I ran for office, you'd Google that and you'd be like, well, you can't be a politician if you're telling all these people to kill themselves, you know? And then I thought I'd sink my chances and it probably will. But now that Google doesn't work, it's harder to find that. So, hey,
do you think, you never know. I mean, okay. So I'm not defending people who have done legitimately bad things. Okay. But do you think we've maybe raised the bar so high now for people having never said anything wrong? Like, I'm sure just in the limited amount of time that you and I have been talking on shows and, you know, me being guests on other podcasts and stuff like that, an opponent could go through and take 50 out of context sentences I have said and just make me look like a monster, even though I don't feel like I've really done that much wrong in my life, you know?
Sure, yeah.
I think the same thing could be said about you too, you know. I think I could take a lot of things that you have said out of context and make you look terrible. So one of the things I think we've kind of done is made it so that we either have people who are so squeaky clean that they don't really represent reality, or we have people that take the opposite end of the spectrum and just do not care and embrace the terrible things they have said. And anyone who does not fit in one of those two, like, extreme outliers just has no hope of ever being in politics now. Am I crazy, or is that kind of what we've done?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think there's two sides to this, and I think both are true, and they're both the opposite thing, and they both can't be true. But on one hand, I really don't think cancel culture is that big of a deal, sum total writ large. I think if you take everything across all the times, I think it probably doesn't change that much compared to other points in history, other than certain things. Obviously, Me Too is big, but a lot of those people are back to work and stuff. So, like, long-term effects, I think there's always been people who their career goes cold. If part of your career going cold is stuff like this and not just having bombs, which, I mean, that's changing. Like, the way that bombs affect actors has been different over the years. You know, like, I want to say Hollywood is more forgiving than it used to be for a lot of people, but not everybody. And maybe now some of that slack is also being taken up by canceling too or something. So the sum total is about the same, whatever, who knows. But, you know, it's always been changing, and this is, you know, so who's to say, like, it's not like there was a time when it was right and now it's broken. So I think there is a take on cancel culture that's like that. Despite what people say, really, it's not that much different once you go where we are now, everything's shaken out. Bill Cosby's out of jail, et cetera. You know, I think that's part of it. But I think there is part of it that's like, we kind of have the worst of both worlds, in that none of the bad people are affected by shame and they can do whatever they want and there's nothing you can do to them. Because it turns out all of our norms are fake, and there's no institutional weight, and this, to extent there is any, no one wants to flex it. And then there's a lot of people that are afraid good-naturedly of getting in trouble and either restrict themselves or find themselves in the line of sights of people trying to police overzealously that end up catching people that aren't doing stuff too bad or aren't hurting people too bad. Or, you know, cynically, there's people, again, on the right who are using this as cover to snipe at people, and other people aren't really caring. So it's kind of like a missing middle. And you, what you want is the middle, and what you have is the edges, which is the bad people aren't affected and the good people are fucked, you know, which is an opposite of what it was hypothetically before, which is the good people aren't affected and the bad people are fucked, right? So I think that kind of is happening, but I also think that's part of like the pendulum swinging and swinging back and stuff and finding a new balance too, you know. But but again, I do think that's why I think they're both true, is because I kind of default to the reality, which is like a lot of the people I really talk to don't adhere to what in my mind is a set of woke principles that I want to publicly espouse and endorse and generally believe. You know, but maybe not every single thing. Maybe I have thought a woman was fat in a way that in my mind that sounds wrong, you know, to think a woman is fat is fat phobic or something, whatever, you know, there's this or that. But generally, even then, it's like I get the idea of a society that's better because people aren't thinking like that. So I can get on board with that even if I stray from it, right? So there's that. Most people I encounter fall short of that a lot, like I do, and don't sweat it very much and don't call people on it very much, but do identify it to the point where you get the sense that they're policing it a little bit, where they're saying, hey, I noticed that. If you are right now doing a test balloon to see what you can get away with by saying, hey, something homophobic, hey, something slur, hey, I'm clocking that a little bit, but I'm not saying don't do that, and I'm not judging you for it. I am noticing that. So if you think I'm not noticing that, I clocked it, but I'm not punishing you, and I'm not saying anything that you could go, that you could turn around and say, man, I don't know about this. You know, it's like there's nothing anyone could complain about, but I'm calling it out. I get that a lot, and that seems very healthy and feels like a healthy level of social policing, and most of the cool people I encounter are like that. And that does seem mostly sustainable. And I think if we can settle around there, it will rub people the wrong way. But once it settles out, I think it'll be a lot better. A lot of people will be less hurt. And the people that bristle against that will calm down and it won't be that big of a issue. Does that make sense?
It completely does. And I think that's taking what I stumbled on and made that a lot more clear. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, because I think I do think it's all true, but I think part of it is like our doomsaying nature is like, is this becoming really bad? And it's like, yeah, we always think that always. And I mean, I guess maybe, but to me, I think a lot more people would be fucked, and most people are fine. The way people are fucked now is everybody's just fucked because the rich people have all the money and they aren't doing anything with it. You know, like we don't have as many A-list celebrities. We don't have as many B-list celebrities. We don't have it's just everybody's fucked because they aren't moving the money. And we could point to anything and being like, and that's a part of it. And it's like, yeah, but there's no more pie. There's less pie. And so it's like, why am I not getting enough pie? It's because I'm not fast enough. And it's like, no, there's not enough pie. There's just less pie, you know? So yeah, I'm being too loud.
What kind of incentives do you think we could give like the top 1% to spend more money rather than hoarding it?
You just have to raise the tax rate, I think, right? Go ahead.
No, I mean, that sort of fixes it going forward, but that doesn't really fix the fact that, you know, such a large percentage of wealth is sat in bank accounts not really doing anything, or in super safe investments that don't really help the world and things like that. Like, what can we do to just convince people to not treat their bank account as a high score and actually do something productive and, you know, keep the economy flowing? Right. Because I sort of feel like that's part of your argument there.
Yeah. So I'm going to go on a tangent. You'll probably have to bring me back because I'm already losing my train of thought, but there's like this law of money that I've discovered, which is the way it's like physics, like money has to make more money faster than less money. Right. and less money has to make money slower than more money. And conversely, money kind of has to flow upwards for that reason. Because, and the reason is, and maybe this is a tautology or something, but the reason it has to work that way is because if it didn't, then that would mean the more money you had, the easier it would be to lose money, and you would just lose money because you had it. And the less money you had, the more you would get money. And so it would reach a, it would like be racing towards an equilibrium all the time, you know, like you'd be getting a money and it would be leaving you because you were getting it, you know, it would kind of like violate the principles of like energy conservation or something, you know, it's like, because if money worked like that, society wouldn't exist the way it would, because basically all the problems wouldn't happen, you know, so money, it has to be cheaper to have more money than it is to have less money. So that means if that's physics, then society has to push against that. If that's a river, then we need to build a dam, you know, to make that not fuck us so bad. And that's what redistribution of wealth is supposed to be. And that's why the government's supposed to redistribute the wealth. So that's not happening. That used to be happening when America was good. It was happening. We had high top tax rates, right? And so high top tax rates is part of that. In terms of like, why is money sitting stagnant? High top tax rates would help that. Another thing that's why money is stagnant, because businesses don't spend it, right? Large on-hand cash reserves. That has to do with interest rates, right? Isn't there like some monetary incentive to like hold money, and there's a way to flex and change like the incentives where I think it has to do with like investing or something. Like if you make money by saving money because interest rates are high, then it's more expensive comparatively to spend money. It's cheaper to save and more expensive to spend. But you can change those dynamics through fiscal policy so that saving kind of loses you money to an extent. And that means you make more money by spending it. And so that policy would incentivize people to lower their cash reserves. And this is broad strokes, and I don't really understand this, but there's a lot of knobs and there's a lot of layers to it. But there are a lot of subtle ways they could incentivize the lessening of business cash reserves would free up money flowing. And another big thing is generational wealth. We do not tax the transfer of generational wealth to the extent that we did. So, that we used to. So rich people give all of their money to the poor people. And because of the natural physics of money, that means the money keeps going there. So when this generational transfer takes place, we have to tax it pretty heavily there, because as the money continues to flow into that big balloon that's being passed to the sun, we have to cut off a huge chunk of that balloon as it will be reinflated by the natural velocity of money, right? And the chunk we're taking off isn't big enough to counteract that. And that's all of what I'm talking about is basically an attempt to do that. And, you know, I don't know which one's the most impactful, which one's less. I think billionaire tax is probably the best way, you know. And then, you know, the very top level undeniable business tax or something, but I'm sure they'd get out of that. But, you know, this is doable stuff. It's just that the business interests and the Federal Reserve, generally speaking, doesn't want to do those things. And maybe they have good reasons. I don't fucking know. But is that an answer? I don't know.
I think that is. And I think that's pretty insightful.
Aren't I a genius? Isn't that crazy? Or everything I said is nonsense, but it sounds pretty good. I could be Jordan Peterson. I mean, come on, right?
I would vote for you. You know,
yeah. And if I had a staff of people that actually understood this stuff, you know, and they told me how it worked, and then I could talk to people about it publicly. Holy right. shit. Right?
Yes.
I just need a haircut. Anyway.
Without going into too many details, like, you know, some of my company's clients are some very high, like well into the top 0.1%, you know, individuals. And nobody I know in that circle would be opposed to paying more taxes. I think mm-hmm. they all feel like their tax rate is way too low. But at the same time, none of them are going to voluntarily pay more if their peers aren't going to do it. Yeah. You know,
so that's why we need politicians with spines, which our current Democrats aren't, but most random fucking people are. which is why they just need to do it. And that is happening. It's happening more. And if it doesn't stop and we don't get too discouraged, I think that will someday win us the day. But we can't just rest on that. I feel like I cut you off anyway.
No, you're 100% right. You know, I think, you know, for most people who, you know, employ a housekeeper, their housekeeper pays a higher tax percentage than they do. Mm-hmm. And that's just the most messed up situation I can imagine. And
that's the thing is that, like, there's so many facts that you could say about the world that would almost reduce people to tears. And you could just say that and be like, I really think that if enough people were like, I don't want that, we could stop it. So, hey, let's all do this, huh? You do it too, but I'm doing it right now. You know, I think that's a good pitch. And that was kind of AOC's pitch. I don't know, like the like her progressive caucus and whatever, like that was generally their pitch. It's been good. Like, you know, people are starting to turn against them, but I think a lot of that's our natural like loser mentality, honestly.
Yeah,
nobody wants to be the poorest billionaire. Thanks, Charlie. Go ahead, Kevin. I cut you off.
No, a lot of people, I think, just do not understand tax brackets, and we've done a very bad job of explaining them. So when, you know, somebody touts out that, oh, yeah, the highest tax percentage is now this, everybody instantly like thinks that applies to everyone, which it doesn't, you know. So that, I think, is really hurting us. And I also think there's this mentality among a pretty big percentage of the country of, like, you know, they all are just like temporarily embarrassed billionaires, you know, like they're all one day going to be in the situation where they're going to pay that rate and don't want to. But I counter that with the people that I do know who are in that situation who would be fine with paying that rate, you know? So it's just very frustrating to me to see that we keep getting into this situation and aren't, like, we're just shooting ourselves in the foot over and over again.
Yeah, I think, you know, people say that, like, Democrats want it this way, and I don't think that's quite the case. But I think the thing is, Democrats have a lot of deep, deep, deep flaws. And I think that Republicans are really good at exploiting them. And they're so good at that, that it makes it feel like Democrats are doing it on purpose. And I guess it's possible they are. But I really think it's, again, listening to Art Bell, and he's like yelling about, like, it looked like there was in like the midterms, I don't know which year of Bill Clinton's term, but during the midterms, he lost the House and Senate. Democrats lost the House and Senate. And so Art Bell's like yelling and like going off about political stuff. And I just, like, hearing it, I was hearing like the same shit I've heard like years and years later, over and over and over and over and over and over, and being like, man, and this is just a guy organically saying this like 20 plus 30 years before. You know, and it's the same thing I'm hearing now. And it's like, it's basically like, sure, you've attained political power, but we don't want you to use it. So it's not fair. It wouldn't be fair for you to use it. And how unreasonable for you to use it. And just because you're using your power that you won when you elected, that's a pretty good, shouldn't you resign? At the very least, I think journalists and people should be asking if he should be resigning. And it's like, and then it gets Democrats in their own head. They're like, oh, fuck, dude. Like, what? Like, maybe, oh, my God. And we did, like, lose these. And it's like, look, you have power. Use your power. That's it. You have the power. You're going to lose the power at some point. You either use it or you don't. If you lose the power without having flexed it, you might as well not have had power. So you have the power. Use the power. Don't be afraid of losing the power because you've already lost the power. You're never going to have the power. You have it now, use it, right? But I just think that's a character flaw. It's a character flaw that I have. It's overthinking. It's worrying about stuff. Another thing that Art Bell said is he was really mad because one of the things he was mad about and that he was yelling about Clinton and he was calling him Fidel Castro and stuff was there was an immigration thing. And, you know, they were like, oh, we want to ban immigrants or whatever, and they're not enforcing the borders or whatever. And so, you know, that's, again, it's a perennial concern. You talk about that today. And so he said, like, the problem is that Democrats' compassion is mindless and endless. And then he hit the lightning bolt sound effect, like the thunderbolt sound effect. And I was like, krakow! And so it's like a, you know, kind of like a mic drop moment. And it's like, okay, yeah, but that's maybe true. But if you go, okay, so what's the mindless and endless of Republicans, right? And it's greed. Would you rather have the government be mindlessly and endlessly compassionate or greedy? Because those are the options. And he's mad that they're too compassionate. And it's like, yeah, but you're too greedy, buddy. And it's like, yeah, those are the pitches. And it's like, yeah, that's what Democrats' problems are. That's why they're so bad that we have all these problems, because their compassion is mindless and endless and they fucking beat themselves up and do stupid shit. But hey, that is better than mindless and endless greed. It causes me problems all the time. I wish I was harder, you know? But that's life. I don't know. That actually kind of circled back better than I thought it would, because the podcast is good and I'm good at doing it. Have you thought about that?
Yes, I've thought that you're good at doing this repeatedly. I think you're absolutely right. And it's like, you know, one of the things that whenever I hear politicians complaining about something like, you know, welfare fraud or something like that, you know, the rate of welfare fraud is extremely low. But even if it wasn't, I would rather 10 people end up with free groceries than one innocent kid starving to death. You know, I don't care. I would rather us be compassionate than greedy. I would rather pay a little bit more in taxes and have a few people abuse the system than have innocent people harmed. You
right.
know, if that's the price of it, then that's the price of it.
I think what you're saying is true and good. And I think a lot of people believe with that, but you know, Democrats have a messaging problem, right? And I think what you're saying has a messaging problem. And I think what you said is part one. I think, hey, if someone's child doesn't starve to death in the streets, I am fine paying a little bit taxes. So that's part one. But here's part two. But guess what? It's not going to cost us more money, because the whole pitch of Democratic politics is that if you do this stuff, you actually save money, because science and history and the way other countries are working and living right now has proven that to be the case. And if that wasn't the case, then we don't have a reason to be pushing to be in office. But that is our whole argument. So let's make it, right? Jesus yes. Christ. Alex Kaufman writes, hey, Spencer, is Kevin's deal that he has his life together? What's that like? Have a reread day.
Boy, do I have my life together? I don't know. There's times I feel I do, and there's times I just feel like everything around me is just pure chaos, and I'm just floating along with the currents. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I feel like I probably have more stability than the average person does. And I've reached a happy part of my life. So yes, maybe. I don't know.
What's it like?
It's hard to judge, because, you know, this is just what I know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. I guess I have my life together, but at the same time, it doesn't always feel that way.
Mm-hmm. So that's what it feels like, is it feels like not having your life together. Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know that there's any situation where I would be where I'd just be like, yep, this is perfect, because there's always, you know, even if there's nothing wrong, there's just something more to do.
I guess that's interesting that, like, I think you're right that when people say has his life together, that implies some amount of perfection. Although I do think having your life together doesn't mean everything's perfect, obviously. It just means, I don't know, you have 70%+ of, like, I don't know, something. Who even knows what? But yeah, I don't know. I know I'm miserable and I hate my life, and I don't like it. And I don't know what to do about it, because the world's bad and I'm not going to fucking fix it.
What would you define as having your life together for you mean?
If I had a stable job and didn't rely on a roommate, I think that would be good enough. Or if I had a stable job and a partner, I think that would be good enough. Or if I had a partner and not a stable job, I guess that wouldn't necessarily feel like having my life together. Yeah.
You feel like once you had those things, though, you would stop there and be like, okay, this is my happy spot? Or would you still feel like, okay, now I need this?
So to me, the having your life together isn't a finish line. It's like a bar. You might call it like a middle class. You know, if you're lower class, you might not have your life together. So it's like you have to have so many things before you get to that. And I don't have any, I would say like any of those things. I think I have experience, talent, and skill. And everybody has that. I don't think my experience, talent, or skill are specialized enough to really edge me out, you know, through degrees and anything, you know, like it's just like, I'm smart. Like I have trust in my brain. It's not like I'm qualified, you know, I don't have a degree like you do or whatever. I don't know. I don't, you know, so that's what I have. And I have a car. I don't have a cat. I used to say like things I have a cat, like that's going well for me. So I have a car. I have an apartment. That's a nice apartment. Although I can't afford it. Yeah. I have a Patreon. That's nice. I have a podcast. That's all I got, you know? I have relationships with people, I guess. But yeah, that's not, to me, that's not enough. You know, if I had a stable job, that would be pretty good. I think you want a stable job and a stable house. And I think in people's mind, being in a relationship is part of having your life together. But I don't think it has to be. But I think in people's mind, that is part of it. But yeah. That's basically our show. Is there another email or is this a long email? I'll read it anyway. Marcus Garvin writes, "Hi, Kevin and Spencer. I sold tickets at a jazz club for a while. One of the things I had to do was go around and tell people before the show that they had to buy a ticket, drink up, or move to the outside tables. I would be wearing a blue work shirt and walk up to the tables holding a card reader and that little stamp thing. Usually I would not say anything to start before people would notice my hovering presence and look up. That's when I would go, 'Hey guys, we're having a show in 30 minutes. Or are you for the concert or whatever?' So one day I walked up to this table with one old gentleman sitting by himself. I was standing in front of him looking for an unnatural amount of time while he was staring his head, probably at my belly. After it became uncomfortable for me, I announced my presence. I don't remember what I said, but it was probably my usual pitch, and I must have mentioned something about him ignoring me. Of course, the man then told me, 'I'm blind,' at which point I laughed out loud, straightened his face, as a release from that awkward situation. Later, I often think about that from his perspective. It must have seemed like I was laughing at him for being blind. P.S. I am so happy that you stopped saying the show is bad. It always bothered me because it's one of my favorite podcasts and I have good taste. Peace in the Middle East, Marcus." Thank you, Marcus. Yeah, that's the thing. That's what I mean is like, I feel like it makes people not happy if I say the show's bad, and that's why I want to stop. And that's also what I'm talking about with the fucking anxiety. You know, if you're constantly saying, "Oh, you must hate me. You must hate me." You know, you're putting that on, you know, it's the same shit. Full circle, good podcast, mic drop. Same thing we do every time we say a podcast, by the end of the podcast.